Guys, are you reading that comic or are we going to start?
Okay, ready to start? Okay. Good evening, and welcome to the 80 Page Cast. I'm Rob London.
Squirrel Girl, she's human, also squirrel. Can she climb trees? Yes, she can, easily. I'm David Henning.
I'm Matt Karpowicz. I'm not going to try topping that.
I'm Andrew Sarahan, and I learned recently that Squirrel Girl slept with Wolverine, so that's interesting.
That's ambiguous. I would dispute that as official canon. It's not going in the handbooks.
Nope.
It should. Nope. It'd be hilarious.
They had some manner really of encounter, the nature of which remains ambiguous.
She's barely old enough to go to college. It didn't happen.
Listen, this is not going to stop Wolverine, but all the same, gross, Wolverine.
I think it would. He's never messed with any of the young girls he's trained before.
I don't know. There are scenes where Kitty and Jubilee talk about Wolverine's junk in some other comics.
To be perfectly honest, Wolverine is the kind of guy who would come out of the shower not wearing a towel, so.
Or, you know, and he's always getting, like, his, you know, costume and or flesh blasted off him, so
yeah.
Most of the X-Men have probably seen the Seventh Claw.
I don't think he has any adamantium there. In fact, I believe that's canon. I believe he's been punched in the nads and crumpled, and somebody's gone, what? You crumpled after that? And he goes, I don't have adamantium there.
And so I guess we know that he doesn't have a baculum.
Enough about zoology. Can we talk about comics, please?
All right.
Yes, we were talking about Wolverine's penis. How is that not comics?
I think that just makes us Kevin Smith.
Oh, we've sunk that low.
Oh.
I'm not Kevin Smith.
Do you or do you not have a beard?
I don't think that's a defining factor of being Kevin Smith. I'm not Catholic, for one thing.
Well, listen, and you Rob, have a beard. David is from New Jersey. I think we're like a composite Kevin Smith.
Yeah, and you definitely have a hockey jersey.
We could form him like a Voltron. Yeah, I'm a hockey fan. So yeah, we just all possess traits of Kevin Smith. We're like his Horcruxes.
The 80 Page Cast
is a bi-weekly podcast, in which we talk about various aspects of comics, popular culture, and usually whatever random nonsense comes up during the course of conversation.
And then it gets cut by David. He cuts
it. Yes, he is merciless.
Oh, really?
He cuts my shit.
Yeah, I do cut your shit.
All right, so the news. First off, looks like another comics character is going to die. I'm sure permanently, forever and ever. It's Deadpool.
Deadpool is dead.
You get what I'm going with there? I'm yawning.
That's
what I'm implying, that it's boring, this
yes,
idea.
We managed to ascertain the subtleties of your crazy.
I know, I was...
Your pantomime.
I was being very gentle in my criticism, so it was difficult to maybe understand.
And thus, the upcoming 250th issue of his comic will be the last issue.
Ooh.
That's another numbers stunt kind of thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where they add the old ones and make a round number.
Well, how do they do that when he's had issue 888?
Well, that counts towards the issue 250.
So do they count the other 887 and then put that in the 250?
Sure.
Possibly.
I'm just making fun of Mark's numbering bullshit.
What's Deadpool's numbering madness? He likes to make fun of it too. So you're making fun of someone making fun of the number. So
you it's horse crap.
Anyway, the point is that, amusingly, he will be apparently killed off by ultimatum, the underground, liberated, totally integrated mobile army to unite mankind.
Yes.
Which is, as far as I'm concerned, Marvel's greatest acronym.
It's the longest one, probably.
It's yes, definitely...
They have the kickiest berets in all of terrorism.
I really do love their outfits as well. They're very Bond villain.
Yeah.
And they're led by Space Ghost. And it's definitely a Mark Gruenwald sat down for a couple hours to work this one out kind of acronym.
Yeah, so he's dying off before his movie comes out.
Yes, well, possibly so that he can come back in time for his movie to come out.
Yeah.
I imagine knowing Deadpool, he'll die, but he just won't go away.
Yeah, maybe.
Or he'll come back as a teenage Deadpool, a black Deadpool, a cyborg Deadpool, and the other one who I always forget. The Eradicator?
The Eradicator was like the tough, grim and gritty one.
Yeah, he had like those kicky sunglasses.
Well, that's already kind of Deadpool. Plus, there's already a bunch of Deadpools. There's a Headpool, a girl Deadpool. There is a kid Deadpool.
There's a dog pool.
They could have girl Deadpool obsess over the idea that... Is Deadpool still married?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, they could have Deadpool's wife obsess over the idea that Deadpool is still alive, and then when they bring Deadpool back, he has like a beard. Okay. Sorry. You guys were going all Death of Superman. I decided to go Death of Reed Richards.
Obviously the first thing that everybody thinks of, the Death of Reed Richards.
Yes.
At the time in the Comics Press, Tom DeFalco complained that after the death of Superman, nobody's going to notice that he killed Reed Richards. He's like, I'm killing Reed Richards. Nobody's going to care. They just killed Superman.
They should have bagged one of those little black armbands with a four on it.
No, like even in the comics, Sue didn't believe he was dead for a minute. Like so throughout the comic
meta.
Yeah. Sue's just like, he's not dead. As if.
Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm going to stop wearing pants.
No, she stopped wearing pants before he died.
Oh. Silly me.
Anyway, next news. Right,
yeah, Deadpool, we've got new trailers for both. We have the first trailer for Ant-Man and the second trailer for Age of Ultron.
Yay. Well, was there anything new in the Age of Ultron trailer?
It looks super neat, but not a whole lot. We got a little more Ultron, a little less Pinocchio.
Pinocchio was still there, a little Hulkbuster was still there.
Yeah, we got the Hulkbuster. And we didn't get a ton of stuff in Ant-Man either.
But I'm far more interested in Ant-Man than I am in Ultron at the moment, in terms of trailers. I don't actually give a crap about the Ant-Man movie, but in talking about the trailer... I think it's really nice that they've gone with Scott Lang and they're giving him his full on. He's got a kid. He's got a criminal past. He's got all that crap. That's really cool. But what really struck me about it was, oh my God, DC generational heroes are your thing. And now everybody's going to think it's Marvel's thing.
Oh yeah. Huh.
Yeah, well, DC decided to kind of abandon the one thing that made their universe unique. Like, bye-bye Wally West, bye-bye Kyle Rayner, etc., etc.
Didn't they replacing bring Wally?
I think he's back somehow.
Like, blue now or something?
Yeah, it was something weird that, like, it was named Wally West, but really isn't.
I believe they're also bringing, Donna Troy back, but does anybody actually like Donna Troy?
Oh, Donna Troy is way too confusing. Why would you do that?
I mean, somebody must like Donna Troy.
She has a nice
Whoever
costume.
Wrote, I guess Marv Wolfman?
Sometimes. Yes.
Although he did marry her to that creepy guy with a beard, that was supposedly also like an author insert.
Terry Long, who bears a striking resemblance to a... circa 1985 Marv Wolfman. Or
to be
also
fair,
to,
Marv didn't draw that.
Well, no. He also bears a certain resemblance to Electric Light Orchestra frontman Jeff Lynne, but that probably wasn't the intention. But anyway, the point is Terry Long is the Wart.
Yeah.
And what was I? Oh, right, Ant-Man. Right, Ant-Man. So, yeah, it's got Michael Douglas, it's got Paul Rudd, it's got, what's her name from Lost with, the haircut of the villainess from Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
That's a nice haircut.
I was really surprised how much the trailer was about the characters and not about the visual aspect.
I did kind of want a little more shrinking.
You'd think that would be the thing they'd try to sell.
I assume that when you get like a theatrical trailer, there'll be all sorts of shrinking in that.
Yeah.
And ant riding.
Well, maybe the shrinking doesn't look good on the small screen. Ha ha ha.
Terrible. Awful.
And speaking of the small screen, the past.
Oh, wait, episodes. I have one more thing about Ant-Man, just a sec, since I was checking the Hasbro customer service website, and there is a generic listing for Ant-Man toys. So we are going to live in a world in which there's going to be an Ant-Man movie toy line.
I think they already showed off pictures of it. I think it's going to be a legend scale, maybe, that comes with a littler Ant-Man, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that is a little strange to wrap your head around, but on the other hand, it's not that strange as what we have now, which is Toy Isle's Rocket Raccoon.
Yep. So, Ant-Man doesn't seem that weird anymore. No, there are little dancing Groots in toy stores.
What a world we live in.
He plays his music.
What's fascinating to me is that they're going with the Ant-Man concept instead of going, oh, we could go with Giant Man or just a generic grow shrink idea. They're just going, yeah, fuck it, we'll do Ant-Man.
Ant-Man never even worked. That's in the sequel?
Probably.
Ant-Man never even worked when frickin' Jack Kirby was working on it, let alone any other time. So I have no idea what the movie's going to be like.
Well, as a big concept, yeah, but for an idea for a movie, shrinking down to a little guy and playing with ants can be do some good visuals with that.
But I mean, that's a classic cinematic thing from, The Incredible Shrinking Man to Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Yeah, if you grow to, like, the size of a building, there's, like, only one thing you could do, break the building, pretty much.
Fantastic Voyage.
Yeah, there are more movies about getting small than there are about
them
that are good. Okay,
Planet of the Giants, that episode of Doctor Who where they... where they shrink down to tiny size and
have a carnival of monsters.
There was an entire TV show about that, Land of the Giants.
Yes. Yep. It's something that works really well in film because you have these giant props and it's fun to play with the giant props.
Yeah.
In comics, Ant-Man works much less well because everything's just drawn. So you don't have that same sense of wonder at the shrinking.
Yeah, it becomes too commonplace, too easy. In a movie, it's fun to keep the sense of wonder and scale and madness.
I def see Paul Rudd chucking some giant pencils around.
But there's also just the aspect of the shrinking works a lot better if it's not a superhero. So, like, there's nothing less threatening than a guy who's going to stop you from committing your crime by getting smaller than he is. Like, oh, no. Wow, I'm definitely going to stop my crime now that you're big enough for me to stand on.
Well, which is probably why they went with Scott Lang, because he'll get tiny and commit a crime.
Oh, tisk. But, no, I mean, Scott Lang is the choice. I mean, Henry Pym is such a broken character.
Yeah.
It's also Scott Lang.
In the comics, it's hard to pin down exactly what Hank Pym is. His character. He's just broken scientist guy. Bipolar,
he's
maybe?
Vaguely mentally ill.
Yeah.
But he's also an okay dude. Yeah. And now he's Michael Douglas. And, yeah. You know, I'm sure Michael Douglas will be able to put something into the character because he's a really good actor.
Yes.
Yeah, and I would hope that Michael Douglas doesn't read a single Ant-Man comic in preparation.
Yeah.
Listen, I want to see some flashbacks of, like, Michael Douglas fighting the porcupine.
Hopefully.
But Michael Douglas doesn't need to read a comic to have that happen.
No.
I would hope that they do show some flashbacks of
him fighting, and then you hear his voiceover, and it's a stuntman in a costume. So basically, flashback Ant-Man is a Power Ranger.
Yes.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Have they ever done an insect-themed Sentai team?
It was the big bad Beetleborgs in America.
Obviously those.
Yeah.
Silly.
What the hell were they called?
Well, those are metal heroes. Yeah. But for straight up Super Sentai, I don't think there's been a bug themed team because that's mostly a Kamen Rider's thing.
Oh yeah, right.
Although I don't think there's been an ant Kamen Rider. There have been like grasshoppers and beetles and stuff.
Even as a secondary one, I don't think there has been.
And I know Japan loves its bugs.
Yeah, because they always go to beetles and praying mantises and things.
They don't have ants in Japan.
No love for the humble ant.
They have ant villains every once in a while.
So anyway, speaking of the small screen and its suitability for trailers, the past couple of weeks have also seen the debut of Agent Carter, the latest TV series in Marvel's ongoing attempts to conquer every form of media.
Yay! How's that? I saw like 30 minutes of an episode.
It's actually really good. It's definitely avoiding the growing pains of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. by not having to be tied into anything.
Yeah. Other than the vagueness of the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, I mean, there's some vague tie-in stuff with the Captain America, and there's been some amusing comics references, and also James Urbaniak was in it, so for a brief shining moment, Dr. Thaddeus Venture was part of the Marvel Universe.
Did he call anyone boys?
Sadly, no. He didn't actually have a lot of lines. He mostly just was kind of a henchman, and then he got beat up during an interrogation.
Oh, hopefully he'll come back.
Does he look like Venture?
James Urbaniak actually kind of does look like, and he has hair.
But, yeah, he has hair and he doesn't have the goatee, but
he kind of has the build, though.
Yeah, a lanky fellow.
And you could definitely shave him bald, have him grow a goatee, and he would be a dead-on live-action Dr. Venture.
Yeah, he's even already got the glasses.
He does have the glasses. And I mean, usually when he pops up on TV shows, he's playing a vaguely Dr. Venture-esque role.
Well, yeah, because he shows up on, like, Law and Order's a lot as the kid.
Yeah, I saw him on a Law and Order where he was like giving women animal diseases.
Dr. Venture, no.
Hilariously, he was taken down by the future Kingpin.
Oh.
Vincent D'Onofrio.
Oh, that's interesting. Anyway, Agent Carter is good.
Yeah, I like it.
Okay, so I will have to check that on the DVR.
And speaking of Kingpin, we now have a release date for Netflix Daredevil, which is April the 10th.
Yay! Wow, that seems kind of soon.
It is. I mean, you know, they filmed it, and it's a TV show. I mean, I assume that a Daredevil series is not going to need a ton of special effects.
What? No, I guess not. Well, you just need really good fight scenes aside
from... Right, I mean, there's stunt work, and presumably there will be some manner of villains.
Maybe for, like, a radar sense.
Yeah, how are they going to get that?
That's true.
They should spend some money on that because it looks really cool in the current, well, recent Daredevil comics.
And I will say it actually did not look bad in that Ben Affleck Daredevil movie.
No, yeah, that was pretty good for the time.
I mean, one of the maybe half dozen things that worked in that movie.
Hmm.
I think the Ben Affleck Daredevil movie has aged better than you think it has. Well, yeah. Because the Spider-Man movies and that looked so great at the time, and they've aged and they've gotten kind of looking kind of shitty, and you think, oh boy, that's aged a bit poorly. But Daredevil, you regard it on a lower level, you watch it now, it's actually not too bad.
Well,
especially if you watch the director's cut.
Yeah, before April the 10th, we are all going to watch that movie, possibly at gunpoint.
Oh dear.
Why?
So we can talk about it on this episode. Well, not this episode, but on the pre-Daredevil episode.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll watch it all together online. At the same time.
I'd be up for that.
Sure, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah, we'll sync it. We can do it!
And I do have the Coolio-filled director's cut.
Oh, that means buying a DVD.
It's the Ben Affleck Daredevil. You can probably get it for like $3.
Probably, if I can find it. Anyway, Ultron looked good, too. I like Ultron. Kind of.
It does seem that Marvel is firing on all cylinders here.
I want to like Ultron.
Whereas DC has run into a couple of pitfalls, the first of which is that their just-announced cast for Suicide Squad is already short one squad member.
Oh, who'd they lose?
And that is Tom Hardy, who was set to play Rick Flagg, who has dropped out due to scheduling conflicts.
No more Bane!
No more Bane. So instead they're looking for Jake Gyllenhaal, because obviously when I think, well, we can't get Tom Hardy, let's get Jake Gyllenhaal. Because they look so much alike.
Whatever.
For the uninitiated, they look nothing alike. I mean, they're both white guys, and that's about it.
We should get Tom... When they make a Machine Man movie, they should get Tom Hardy to play Sunset Bane.
Sure.
That's terrible. Oh, you know, the man is a chameleonic actor. He could totally pull it off. Put him in, like, a you know Betty Page wig and a green jumpsuit. He's all set to go.
Sunset Bane... Oh, it's a lady.
It's the name of his lead villainess. Oh.
Yes. What was it? Madame Menace?
Yeah. Oh.
She used to wear some terrible Ditko makeup.
Yes.
Oh, Ditko.
I really like Ditko, but attractive women are not his forte.
Well, yeah, when I think of Rick Flagg, I mean, you could basically get any kind of... someone you could get to play Duke from G.I. Joe, really. Like, you could probably just stick Channing Tatum. Yeah.
Channing Tatum. Yeah, but he's going to be our Gambit.
Oh, yeah, that's so weird. A thing that's happening.
Yep. He seems like a good enough actor. He's, the Foxcatcher? He seems to be really good in that.
Everybody says good in that. I mean, he wasn't good in G.I. Joe, but, I mean, nobody was.
No, not really.
I can't blame somebody for not bringing their full thespian powers,
I like the scene with The Rock.
Well, it's hard not to like The Rock. The Rock is always The Rock.
Between like the first and the second G.I. Joe movies, there was like this kind of revelation about Tatum after he was in 21 Jump Street. It's like, whoa, hey, wait, this guy can act.
He could be funny. What?
And then there were rumors about, like, they're delaying the second G.I. Joe movie to add more Tatum or whatnot, which I guess they didn't end up doing. But, yeah, between the first and the second film, he exploded.
I mean, maybe it's for the best because now Channing Tatum doesn't have to be in G.I. Joe 3.
Yay, no more Duke.
Unless, of course, I still kind of wish they had overdubbed the end of that movie with a line about how Duke's going to be okay.
I was so expecting that. And it didn't happen.
What? When he dies, have a line come over saying he's going into a coma.
Well, they kind of blew him up, so there was no one there to say anything about it.
I mean, having him blow up and be in a coma makes about as much sense as him being stabbed in the heart with a snake and going into a coma.
Maybe his heart was on the other side or the snake sneezed. I don't know.
I don't think it matters which side you get impaled through the chest. If you get impaled through the chest, you're probably going to die. There's some important bits in the chest.
Well, maybe the serpent venom stopped the blood flow. Why are we talking about G.I. Joe?
That is a
because
good question.
Because this is our most off-topic episode we've ever done. That's why.
That's true. Next and final news item, I think, is that... DC has announced a new TV series, Vixen, which is an animated series and will be in continuity with Arrow and Flash.
Well, trying to do that is a little weird, but hey, we're getting Vixen, a female-led cartoon.
Yes, non-white female lead.
That's, that hasn't really ever happened. I mean, we've had Static Shock, but that was... just a not white guy.
Wait, what about the Legend of Korra? Is she white?
No, not really. She's voiced.
Kind of like the equivalent of an Inuit, I think.
Yeah, she's Eskimo.
Okay,
anyway,
well that counts
but
then.
That's not DC or Marvel. This is this
well, no. And as far as leads go in comics cartoons, you pretty much, yeah, it's Static Shock and then a bunch of Supermans and Batmans.
Yeah, a bunch of white guys.
And Spider-Mans.
I was like, is this the first superhero cartoon led by a female, really?
Has there ever been a Wonder Woman cartoon?
There was a Spider-Woman cartoon.
Oh, okay. Right, there was. That
so
was a thing.
Decades.
Yeah, that is late 70s.
Yeah, but it was there.
It was there. It's kind of sad that they haven't done anything since the late 70s.
Well, be fair. No, so there's really no way to be fair about it. It's kind of shit.
Yes.
Well, I remember.
I mean, especially how scared DC is of Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
Like, DC are desperately scared of using Wonder Woman. She's a freaking household name. Everybody knows who Wonder Woman is. People in Korea, right? When I watch Korean shit, they reference like a handful of heroes. They reference Spider-Man, Iron Man, Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman. And that's fucking it. And DC refuses to fucking use her as a solo character in other media. They're idiots. They're freaking idiots. And it's sexist and it's bullshit.
Well, and we nearly got a Wonder Woman...
Yeah, there was almost a Wonder Woman TV show with... Wait, who was doing that?
That was David E. Kelly, the Alan McBeal guy.
No, that's not what I was going to bring up.
Oh, something else?
I was going to bring up Wonder Woman and the Star Riders, where basically Wonder Woman was in the role of She-Ra.
Oh, right.
It was the early 90s. Yeah, she had a whole team of other superhero wins with her. And they fought, of course, a cat-themed supervillainess. And as far as I know, they canceled the toy line, they canceled the cartoon, and the only thing that came of it were cereal box pack-in comic books. And that is the extant fiction for Wonder Woman and the Star Riders.
It's so pathetic, really. It really is pathetic.
Yeah.
And Marvel's not much better, to be honest. They're not much better. I mean, in all this shitstorm of Marvel, there's still not a female-led film.
Well, part of the problem is that there's really not a big enough name Marvel female character.
Oh, bullshit. Rocket Raccoon, son. My reply to anybody saying, oh, there's not a big enough character to use.
I know.
Rocket fucking Raccoon.
Well, no, the point of that is that there's no obvious first female character they would have picked when they started making, like, Iron Man and Hulk and Captain America. We're going to have a Captain Marvel movie with Carol Danvers in a bit.
Oh, I hate Carol Danvers.
Well, yeah, because you like the other lady Captain Marvel. Monica Rambeau. Monica Rambeau hopefully will be in the movie. She better be in the background somewhere doing something awesome.
I hope so. But it is nice to know that they're going to have a female-led cartoon. And let's see more of that shit, man. Let's see more of it. Let's see more awesome chicks doing awesome shit.
Yeah.
That's all I want.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Well, yeah, I guess the closest we had to that was that Amethyst TV miniseries.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm. I did not see that. It didn't really air up here.
Well, it's only like 7 minutes long. Yeah, it was decent.
Oh, the DC Shorts thing. Yeah.
Yes.
DC Nation, yeah.
Well, I didn't want to watch the things it was wrapped around, so I didn't see it.
Well, they were uploading a bunch of them, too, like, legally. Jeez, Wonder Woman even had a magical horse in the Star Riders.
Wow, it's really She-Ra. Yikes. In other words, it would have probably done okay. Anywho.
All right, so in that case, I think that about does it for the news. Shall we move on to what we read this week?
Sure. You go first.
Okay. Well, I had a couple of big number one issues this past week, past fortnight.
There you go.
First off, The Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, which is just as delightful as I thought it would be.
It was good.
It's written by Ryan North of Dinosaur Comics. It's drawn by Erica Henderson. It's very funny.
Almost every page has alt text at the bottom.
Yes, much like it's at the very bottom of the panels.
Teeny tiny text.
Yeah, it's very funny. It devotes most of its opening pages to Squirrel Girl's theme song.
Yes.
And it's a genuinely funny book, and I really enjoyed it.
Well, why did you enjoy it? Is it because of Kraven the Hunter?
That's not the only reason, but, I mean, Kraven the Hunter is hilarious.
Yeah.
He wears a lion's face for a shirt. Sometimes he has laser beams that come out of the lion, out of the lion's eyes slash his nipples.
Wait, that doesn't happen this time. He has a nerf gun and he kicks a squirrel.
He does kick a squirrel.
Now, how is he alive again?
Magic.
Alchemy magic.
Yeah, not Magic the X-Man. Magic.
Okay, well, for some reason I thought there was, like, a revival attempt that brought him back wrong, so is he, still around from that?
He is, but he did... Thing is, they brought him back without considering that he kind of wanted to be dead, but because they screwed it up and used the wrong blood in the blood sacrifice, he can't die anymore, even though he kind of wants to. Unless Spider-Man kills him. And Spider-Man doesn't kill people.
Yeah, so that's weird. Oh, so he should have encountered Otto. That would have been fun. Please kill me. But anyway, yeah, Squirrel Girl kind of fixes his problem of being depressed.
Yes.
But by telling him that, well, if you can't be killed by anyone but Spider-Man, why don't you go hunt the game you always wanted to but was too big and dangerous and would kill you? Like a giant whale man.
Giganto.
Yeah.
Oh, so, well, that's a nice callback.
Yeah.
You don't see much Giganto these days.
Sadly not.
The art looks fun.
Art is very fun.
The art's adorable. Squirrel Girl's face looks too much like a chipmunk to me.
Or, you know, like a squirrel.
Yeah, well, kinda. Big, big puffy cheeks.
Yeah, like a squirrel.
Well, they call them chipmunk cheeks. They don't call them squirrel cheeks.
Yes.
Well, yes, but I mean, squirrels have them. That's where they, store their nuts.
Couldn't go for a whole episode of discussing Squirrel Girl without you bringing up a nuts gag, eh?
Listen, it's a fine tradition. Ever since Dan Slott introduced her method of acorn storage, which is, of course, her emergency nut sacks.
Oh, emergency nut sacks.
No.
They're sacks. They have nuts in them.
Yeah.
No.
That's horrible.
So what did you read this week, David?
Conan and Red Sonja by Gail Simone, Jim Zub, and... Wait, who's the artist?
So we have Conan the Adventurer. Conan, so is it War Without Fear?
Well, not the cartoon version.
Is it a series called Conan and Red Sonja, or is it two different series?
It's one series called Conan Red Sonja. It's
okay.
Weird. Well, they do have a running Conan series and a running Red Sonja. I think Gail Simone's writing the Red Sonja. I don't know who's writing Conan. But this is a crossover, I guess. But as with most Conan stuff, it just sort of happens any old time in his timeline. So he just runs she's trying to break into a castle where a young prince is given supposedly a giant jewel by his dad for some coronation or whatever, some shit. And Conan is breaking in at the same time to steal it too. So while they're bickering over who's going to get the box with the stone, Conan just stabs the prince in the chest because he was trying to alert the guards. So they have to run away. It's like, shit's going to happen. We'll divvy up the jewel later. But then as they get away, of course, in the night, Sonja tries to take the jewel away. Conan wakes up. They have a little fight. And then some guy shows up to pay them then. It's like, you were just standing here waiting for us to wake up. Just watching us to see if we would kill each other. And then
I don't
want to
wake Conan up. He seems like the kind of guy who stabs his alarm clock.
Yeah, probably. And then he pays them, but he tells them a story about the things. It wasn't actually a giant jewel in the chest he had them both go after. It was a collection of seeds for, what is it called, a blood flower or something? Some horrible thing that will grow and become ultimate power and take over entire lands, which at the beginning of the issue, he plants one of them on a little island. And by the very end of the issue, spoilers, it's taken over the entire island as this red creeping vine and killed everything. So Conan and Red Sonja kill this guy after he pays them because he was jabbering about, oh, powerful plant, thing, thing, thing. And they just up and kill him at the end and take the money and split up. So basically, it's kind of like a one-shot because it might be leading into a story, but at the very end, they just split up and go their merry ways with the money.
So, do you regularly read Conan, or did you pick this up for a specific reason?
I did pick this up because of a specific reason, because it's like Gail Simone, she writes good stuff. I've read a lot of Jim Zub recently, so I figured, hey, I'll give it a try. Every once in a while, I do pick up a Conan comic and read it, and I just don't continue on with it. I don't know if I'll continue on with this, especially since it's a really good self-contained issue of just Conan being Conan and Red Sonja wandering around in her chainmail bikini. Although, at least it's nice, Conan is nearly as nude as she is. Like, he has pants, and his abdomen is covered by belts, but his chest and most of his arms is completely naked. He has a little.
Well, he usually runs around in, like, He-Man fuzzy underwear, does he?
Yeah, he has a little bit more than that, but it's very prominently showing off his chest. It's like, hey, look at this, ladies, and Red Sonja's running around in giant thigh-high boots and her little metal bikini and gloves. And they don't care. They're just killing people. Yeah,
it's the Hyperion age.
Yeah. Nobody messes with them.
Well, you've had a lot of good creators working on Conan over the years. I mean, you've had, like, Kurt Busiek, too, and I mean, going back to the 70s, the whole Barry Windsor Smith explosion.
Yeah.
Roy Thomas? I know how much you like Roy Thomas.
At least he can't bring anybody back in Conan just to kill them.
Oh, I bet he did. He had all those books to work from.
Yeah, true. Although the weird thing about the 70s Conan books is apparently sometimes they readapted the same story because they really reconfigured it when they were doing the early run, and then they figured later, well, let's do a more faithful adaptation this time around.
Yeah. Well, no, those were good. They had Big John Buscema on them.
Yeah, I imagine those have all been collected and stuff.
That was really good because it's John Buscema actually giving a crap.
Well, he did really well for Marvel, too. I mean, he, in his silly little helmet, showed up on promotional covers and things like that for other series.
Like, it's always weird to see those old subscription ads where he's there with all the like stuff Marvel actually owns.
And, like, the Marvel No Prize book you were reading, I think on the back of it has an ad for Conan.
Probably. Although I'm not sure why you brought up the Marvel No Prize book. Anyway, So David, is that all you thought about Conan, and shall I go on?
It was good. You can go on.
Okay. So what I read was, well, the start of a new series for me. So a lot of the series I'm getting are either over or ending. So I had She-Hulk on my pull, and yeah, She-Hulk.
That's gone.
Sub.
That's gone. It was so good.
Yeah.
All new Ghost Rider seems to be dead.
Yeah, it's winding down. There's
left,
I think.
Yeah. And so I decided, oh, I'm going to leap on a new comic. So I picked up the first 5 issues of Ms. Marvel to try them out. And I was very impressed. I thought it was a really nice read. It has a different perspective, and I always appreciate a comic with a different perspective. I mean, I've read a million comics about white male superheroes. It's kind of nice to read one about a female Muslim, you know, just – it's a very Spider-Man comic, very early Spider-Man. It's one of the traditions of Marvel is to create a new comic and basically go right back to the old Spider-Man concept. You know, you think back to Nova when he was launched and he was basically Spider-Man. And this is also very, very much in the vein of early Spider-Man. It's basically girl gets powers and the powers cause as many problems as they solve. And, I like that formula. It works really well.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I really enjoy Ms. Marvel as well. It's a good book. It's a very likable book.
Yeah, so I'm obviously I'm quite behind on it because I've only read the first 5 issues, but I'll get the others. I will get the others. My comic shop did not have the others yet. I have put them on order.
Well, it's doing very well for Marvel on digital too, I think.
Uh-huh.
It was like their number one digital seller.
Oh, that's really good. I hope it goes for a good standard run for a modern comic. So like, I don't know, 25 issues or something.
Have you gone to the bit where they reveal the big villain?
Nope. Oh, the
parrot man.
Parrot?
The inventor. The parrot yes.
Man? Oh, yes. That is the last thing I read was the splash page that
Yes, he
reveal him.
They cover his origin a little bit, and it is delightful.
Ah, well, I haven't gotten to his origin yet. Just the splash page that reveals him.
Did
you want to talk about Ant-Man?
Oh yeah, we could do that.
Okay, so we both read the first issue of Ant-Man.
Yeah.
I really liked it. It's got a lot of the laid-back comedic feel that Nick Spencer's previous work, Superior Foes of Spider-Man, has.
Yeah, it was a setup of, like, Superior Foes-ish without being as funny. It was more serious.
Right, I mean, it's less of a comedy because your protagonist has to be a little more likable than Boomerang.
And yeah, Boomerang was really likable because I really don't know anything about Lang.
He's also an ex-criminal. It's just he doesn't want to keep being a criminal.
And yet he kind of mentions that in his interview. Or wait, yes. Is the other guy bringing up first? I forget.
Yeah, the premise is that he's interviewing with Tony Stark's company to get a security position. And he has to compete in a series of challenges against a couple other costumed characters. In this case, Prodigy of the X-Men, Victor Mancha of the Runaways, and the female Beetle from Superior Foes.
Yeah.
It's always nice to see the Beetle again. He's the breakout star of that book.
Yeah. Well, the breakout star was really Shocker, but she was the
best character. And anyway, I like the writing. I really like the Ramon Rosanas art.
Oh, yeah.
And I also like the attempt to portray Lang's ex-wife as, well, sort of an antagonistic character, but not a shrill harpy.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know. Her portrayal was like, she's kind of had it with Scott's crap, but she doesn't seem to have a character beyond that. At least,
I mean, she's not in it that much, but, she's presented as having an entirely reasonable viewpoint because, he's constantly fighting terrible villains and dying occasionally.
And going on various different teams and different jobs and not sticking with anything and running away from everything, basically.
Yeah.
So anyway, throughout he actually does manage to... Well, they had to hack into a computer with a password and nobody could figure out the password. So Stark said, you can do it tomorrow. But then he sneaks into Stark's apartment to try and steal the password. Surprise, Beetle was already there trying to seduce Stark to get the password. and Stark's like, hey, you win. You were trying to do that. You were breaking through my security system, which is what I wanted you to do the job for, so you win. It's kind of an obvious, the job interview wasn't the job interview. It's breaking into my place.
Yes.
And then he gets the job. Beetle gets pissed and tries to kill him. She gets away. And then at the end, Lang doesn't take the job because his ex-wife moved his daughter to Florida.
Yes.
And he quits. He moves to Florida to move into a little toy apartment in his daughter's room.
Yes.
Wait, his daughter is alive again?
Yes, she is alive again thanks to Dr. Doom.
And wait, what?
During the brief time when he was not evil.
Wasn't she a superhero or something?
Yes, she was.
Stature.
Yeah.
Stature.
She changed size or something. I guess she's not a superhero anymore. And not old enough to be. It's like she's looks like she's like 12 in this, I guess.
I think she's supposed to be 15.
Maybe a little 15. Older, 15. Yeah.
But anyway, she was killed while superheroing and then by Dr. Doom in basically a fit of pique. And then Doom, when he was inverted into a good guy during the Axis event, decided to siphon off the Scarlet Witch's power and use her rally art and altering powers to undo one of the crummy things that he has done.
Oh,
that, and that crummy thing was nice. Killing Stature.
Well, that's alive nice. Again. But why isn't that mentioned at all in this issue? I didn't even know she.
Because that's a lot of continuity to unpack in a single issue.
I guess that might come in a future issue. But the problem is, it finally seemed like Lang was like breaking out of the "I'm running away from every problem" thing. He was going to take the job. He was going to do that to try and help better his daughter's life.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just runs away again to hide from his ex-wife in his daughter's room, not having a job, pissing off Tony Stark, making an enemy a Beetle, although I don't know if she'll ever show up again. Stark will probably be the main antagonist if he shows up again.
Yeah.
But it was such a good issue until the very end where it's like, fuck it, I'll run away again. Like,
well, that's the thing. I mean, that is kind of what he does.
Which means I don't like him and I don't want to read more about him.
No, I mean, he's got that struggle, but he can't resolve that struggle in a single issue.
Yeah, but the problem is the thing that seemed to be like the one good thing he had was he was a good father to his daughter.
Yes.
And yet now he quit another job. He's lying to his ex-wife. He's hanging out with his daughter behind her back. Well, tiny, shrunken down. That's another thing. His ex-wife said, no shrinking my daughter anymore. Whatever, you can come visit and shit. Just don't shrink her. And he's shrinking her at the end. He's being a shitball to his ex-wife and his daughter. In a way, he's trying to be good to his daughter through the worst possible means.
Yeah, I mean, he's Scott Lang. He is an ex-convict. He's not, you know.
I know, but
He makes a lot of bad choices.
Yes. Yes, he does. I guess if they're trying to go for, like, a Breaking Bad kind of thing.
This guy is trying to get his life together, but he's not great at it.
I know, but he's doing it in the worst possible way. It's like he could have kept the job, visit the daughter in Florida every once in a while, be a man. But no, he's like, nah, fuck it. I'm going to Florida.
Well, that's your hook. I mean, I'm sure he's going to get... And also, I admit, I'm unreasonably excited because I really like it when superheroes move to non-New York cities.
Okay, admittedly, going to Florida, change of pace, it's something different. His main villain, to replace, like, the tracksuit Dracula's, will be Florida Man, will be his villain, maybe.
I mean, I assume that... I will note for Matt's sake that this is an ongoing Marvel comic set in Florida.
Yeah.
Well, that probably means there'll be an appearance by the Man-Thing at some point.
Probably the Man-Thing, and I'm also guessing the Slug.
Can we hope for Poison?
I'm hoping for Poison.
I have no idea what has been up with Poison since the late 1980s.
Not a whole lot.
What about the Glob?
Also a possibility. I'm kind of out of Florida supervillains now.
That's it. We'll have to invent all new ones.
Or just, you know, older supervillains who've moved there to retire.
Oh, okay. That would actually be a really good hook if that's what the series could be about.
Well, we do have an entire town of ex-circus folk.
It's true.
Molecule Man once possessed a kid in Florida.
Oh, hey, maybe it's a town of, like, ex-carnies from the circus of crime.
Oh, yeah. If they do something like that, that'd be a better hook other than what this issue sets up. I don't like Scott Lang at the end of this issue.
I mean,
well,
I think
of it this way. The last Ant-Man ongoing they had, he was literally irredeemable.
It's true.
Yeah, I didn't want to read that.
That's actually a really good book. It's only 12 issues, so it's a fast read.
Was his daughter in Young Avengers?
Yes.
Not the most
Does that mean she was gay?
No. In fact, she was dating the Teen Vision.
Oh, okay.
Who was a dude, so not gay.
Oh, I'm just curious because I'm
also a robot.
Know her from flirting
also a
with
robot, yes. I
mean, Crystal.
She may be a robosexual.
Well, like I said, she used to flirt with Christoph back in the day.
Oh yeah. And he's still around.
Yeah, I bring it up because when Tom DeFalco did Fantastic Five for Marvel 2, do you remember Marvel 2? MC2. Yeah. She was like, had a wasp type.
Yeah, she was a stinger.
Yeah, and she hooked up with Christoph in that. So, one true pair, Christoph and Cassie Lang. Is it Cassie Lang?
Cassie Lang, yeah.
Yeah.
And hey, she has to be in it because she'll be in the movie.
Is that what the kids today say? Is one true pair?
OTP.
I think
OTP.
It's pairing.
OTP. Oh, OTP. That's OTP? What they say. Oh my god!
Yeah, I think the ex-wife is in the movie as played by TV's Judy Greer.
Okay.
You know, she's Cheryl on Archer. And she's on Arrested Development.
I was wondering why the name seemed familiar.
And she's in the new, she's going to be in the new Jurassic Park. She's everywhere these days, which is great because Judy Greer is delightful.
I don't know, the new Jurassic Park looks like balls.
That, if you mean, if balls means awesome, then I agree.
It looks ballin', yes.
No, by balls I mean shit.
But
I mean shit balls.
But it's got the Lego Star-Lord in it. It's going to be
true.
Awesome.
No. What it's got is the plot of Alien Resurrection.
I know.
Listen, I may have liked some aspects of Alien Resurrection, and if it really had the plot of Alien Resurrection, it would have, like, Muldoon from the first movie resurrected with like half dinosaur DNA.
Oh, a clone Muldoon.
Which,
oh,
now that I think about it, I kind of want to see. Unfortunately, that actor is dead.
Oh, no, no, we can just assume that the hybrid monster in the movie is Muldoon.
The joy of going to see a Jurassic Park movie is to see dinosaurs realized on screen like they're real things.
Yep.
So they made up a fucking fake dinosaur. That just ruined it. It's terrible.
How is
it's the chaos effect.
Exactly. It's chaos effect. And I loved chaos effect.
Also, for the sake of continuity, they're not updating the dinosaurs, which is also horseshit.
Admittedly, okay, not sticking feathers on dinosaurs is complete bullshit, but the original movies didn't make up giant velociraptors that don't exist.
Or venomous, frilled Dilophosauruses.
Yeah. So taking liberties is a thing that Jurassic Park has always done.
Well, yes, also a thing it's always done is hating on science.
Kinda.
Yes. I grew out of Jurassic Park, and I am not looking forward to a fourth one.
I'm
looking forward to it.
I'm looking forward to it because of Chris Pratt. And a like killer dinosaur.
I hope you guys absolutely love it.
Maybe we will, maybe we won't. It might be Chris Pratt's first bad movie.
He's been in movies before, I think.
He was?
Probably some of them are bad.
I don't know, I guess.
Okay, and then I think that leaves you. Matt, what have you got?
Yeah, well, I have finished the rest of Dick Tracy's Fiendish Foes, which closes out 1957 with Dick Tracy versus Miss Egghead, where not a whole lot to talk about with this one. I mean, it's a very good death trap for Dick Tracy, and it does feature an unusual appearance by pre-communist Cuba. Like, Dick Tracy goes to Cuba to solve, like, something or other. Unfortunately, with this story, they don't print the beginning of it. They just print Miss Egghead's revenge on Dick Tracy, which, being as the tail end of her revenge came on the start of a hurricane, she ends up skewered through the chest by flying debris. And then her compatriots, who were trying to kill Dick Tracy for her, she paid them, they end up drowning upside down in an airplane.
Because if there's one tradition that Dick Tracy has, it's gruesome death.
But, you know, it is gruesome, but it's not quite thematic, which that's all I'm going to say about the Miss Egghead story. But then Dick Tracy's Fiendish Foes jumps from 1957 to 1971 with A Woman Scorned, featuring the mole returning from the 1930s or 40s, his granddaughter, who looks like a sexy girl version of the mole, who is named Moline. The Pouch, who was a circus fat man who shrunk himself down, but he still had a lot of excess skin, so he had clasps installed just below his neck, and he has a flesh pouch, which is why he's called the Pouch.
Ooh.
And the big villain of the piece, who is Johnny Scorn, who, despite that incredibly awesome name, is themed around really liking popcorn.
Okay.
Well, he's a crime boss involved in, like, diamond smuggling, but his gimmick is he really likes popcorn.
Okay.
And so there's a plot going on. I'm not really going to get into it because what interested me more was the end of the story, but basically Moline and another woman who Scorn was dealing with in his diamond smuggling ring, well, they all get blown up and buried under tons of rock at a quarry while Scorn manages to escape using an air-powered, like, transport tube that runs from the quarry to his parents' mausoleum. And so he escapes getting blown up while his compatriots die. And then the Pouch comes after him because he was late to the meeting where everybody got blown up. It's like, you know, if I wasn't late, I'd have died too. And you paid me in counterfeit money, Scorn. Because Yeah, so the pouch has a right to be angry, even though, you know, he was involved in a diamond smuggling operation as well. So after paying the pouch in what he says is real money, the pouch goes over to get himself some popcorn, and he leaves 6 blasting caps in Johnny Scorn's popcorn machine. And so at this point, you know, Dick Tracy suspects that Johnny Scorn might have gotten blown up with his compatriots, although they found the transport tube and trying to figure out how it works and all that. And the pouch leaves Johnny Scorn's penthouse apartment where the popcorn maker is running. And then tick, 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 kaboom, and Johnny Scorn is burned to death in his penthouse by his exploding popcorn maker. And the thing about that is, for 3 days in a row, they show closer and closer and closer on the fire with Johnny Scorn sitting on his little couch, burning to death in complete blacked-out shadow. So it's just like, wow. That is kind of gruesome.
He's really, really dead. Yikes.
And I mean, that just struck me as like a very thematically fitting death for a guy whose whole thing was liking popcorn. And the other weird thing about the end of the story, though, is that, you know, like we were talking about, gruesome death usually meets Chester Gould's villains. And here, not only does the pouch survive, but so does Moline's grandfather, the mole. And he's, like, very regretful over his granddaughter getting blown to smithereens. And the last few strips of well, they call a sequence of stories in a newspaper strip a continuity. Mm-hmm. So the end of the continuity here is Moline and the pouch in, like, this... not a charter. Yeah, I guess it's a charter plane, a small one. And they fly over the rock quarry together and throw a wreath down onto it. And the very last part of the story is Pouch and Mole, like, crying over the death of Mole's granddaughter. Which, I mean, for a strip that is very not kind to criminals is kind of touching.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I don't want to get into the actual story itself since I just got to the end of it, but the other weird part of, well, 1970s strip, and Gould is very railing against laws that help out suspected criminals. Here it is. Legal loopholes plus inability to identify property as stolen and prove a crime has been committed has so far made a shambles of the case against Mole and Moline. Their attorney is getting a writ of replevin for those sparklers was the last straw. And basically they suspect them all of diamond smuggling and such like, but they can't prove it and they have to give them their boxes of diamonds back, except they don't. They give them boxes of fakes, and yeah, Gould was kind of hardline against criminals. That's the end result there.
Yeah, they're real. Why didn't you read him his rights? What about the rights of that little girl? Kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, I read some more too in the rest of the collection, but the Johnny Scorn one was the one that I wanted to talk about in depth.
Poor popcorn guy.
Gould probably would have liked Judge Dredd, is what you're getting at.
Of course, Judge Dredd is supposed to be a satire.
Yeah, I don't think he wouldn't have even known it was a satire. He'd just been reading it like, yeah, this is how it should be. This is law enforcement. A lot of those comic strip creators were very conservative. The famous one is the creator of Little Orphan Annie killed off Daddy Warbox because of the New Deal. And when what's his name? What was the president's
Franklin
name?
Delano Roosevelt.
Yeah, when Roosevelt went out of power, suddenly Daddy Warbox came back. There's definitely a lot of conservatism. It's understandable because they got rich. You know, like, over in comic books, you couldn't really get rich, so you didn't have any reason to be a conservative.
And so you have a lot of sort of left-leaning people doing comic books. But then over in comic strips where you can actually get rich doing it, well, shit, you want no taxes. You want all the things that rich people want, so you become a conservative. And
I got mine, buddy.
A lot of them were socially liberal, I guess, but fiscally conservative. But then a lot of them were socially conservative too. I mean, like, you look at Lee Falk's stuff compared to a lot of his contemporaries, and he just looks like a freaking hippie by comparison, you know.
I guess the difference is that Falk, I guess, was maybe more worldly due to his world travels.
Yeah, but a lot of his world travels were fabricated. So early on in his Phantom strip was very globetrotting. And, you know, they would claim that he'd been to these places and that he did all that sort of stuff. And so after a while, when he started to get really rich from it, he said to himself, you know what, maybe I should actually do some globetrotting so that all this crap that they say about me is actually a little bit real. And so then he became the globetrotter people had talked about for at least a decade already. Yeah, it's funny because, I mean, you know, they all – I've read some really interesting interviews with Lee Falk. Like he knew the guy who did Ripley's Believe It or Not.
Oh, Robert – I'm actually reading his biography, Robert Ripley. It's an interesting guy.
And he was a drunk apparently and yes. Basically he'd gotten famous more or less by accident doing this little newspaper thing that went national, and he got really drunk. And you know, Lee Falk would hang out with him every now and then, but apparently he was terrible with people's names. And so he didn't actually know Lee Falk's name, and he just called him Mandrake. And apparently one time the head editor at King's Feature Syndicate was calling around to try and find Lee Falk, called up Ripley and he's like, Lee Falk, I don't know who that is. He hung it up, and then Lee Falk's like, who was that? And he goes, oh, it's the editor, you're looking for somebody, you know, Lee Falk, do you know who that is, Mandrake? And he's like, that's me. So he was so drunk, this guy. But there were a few other people who, because of politics, Lee Falk had falling outs with and stuff like that. There's a lot of interesting characters in those old comic strips, behind the scenes as well as in the panels themselves. Apparently, King's Features Syndicate was an interesting place to work back then. I can't imagine it is now. I imagine it's boring as batshit with just old men sort of dribbling on their panels. This'll do. Popeye, he's spinach eating toast.
The most exciting part of the week is when that young whippersnapper Jim Davis comes in.
Yeah, here is the thing that kind of sums it up for me. Just this, a two-panel strip, and one is a big, like, two panels across, close-up of Dick Tracy staring at the viewer going, yes, under today's interpretation of the laws, it seems it's the police who are handcuffed. It's like, wow, that is not subtle at all.
God, he sounds like one of those people who's like, well, of course they have to shoot him. What are they going to do? You know, what are they going to do?
Just send them to 6 months in the cubes, I guess.
Oh, my goodness.
All right. So I think let's continue on that theme of comics going into politics with this week's Appendectomy, which covers the subject of superhero comics getting into global politics. And that rarely ends well. I got a message from the Great Lakes Avengers. They offered me a membership, but I did not accept it. They're a walking disaster. Like an owl with a fireball, it just only sends out through the West. Here's a long time. To call themselves Avengers is a crime. Okay,
so who are we looking at this time?
All right. we're looking at a set of characters from Africa, specifically a fake African country. The country of Azania, which is one of Marvel's many fake South Africas.
Many.
And specifically, it's like 80s apartheid South Africa.
Ooh, the worst kind of South Africa.
Yes. As you can imagine, this fake South Africa, not super friendly with the black-ruled Wakanda. And so to combat the Black Panther, they came up with the Supremacists.
Okay.
A group of superheroes devoted to defending the apartheid government of Azania.
Yeah, they have a guy called the White Avenger.
Yes, we've got Barricade, who is like a force field guy.
Oh, so
we've got Captain Blaze, who is a fire guy.
Of course.
We've got Harrier, who is the guy who has like an armored suit that doesn't have a helmet. We have Hunger, who wants it so bad he can taste it, and it drives him mad to see it wasted. But you can tell that he's extreme because instead of hunger with an E, it's hunger with a Y. Hunger.
Well, I'm glad Transformers never had a character that spelt hunger in a
weird,
strange
way.
In a variety of strange ways, none of which agree with each other.
And they have
I knew that joke was worthless as I was telling it, and I was abandoning it as I was telling it. Let's forget it. Let's move on.
They have a slightly more clothed Zardoz called Vortrekker. Vortrekker?
He's like the kind of, I guess he's the Batman of these guys, because he doesn't have any powers. He's just like a super tracker.
It looks like Zardoz wearing a bit of a shirt.
Yeah, I mean, he's got longer hair, but he's definitely got the mid-70s Connery stash.
Yeah, and
kind of a garter belt for some reason.
Yeah.
But anyway, Hunger is the guy with the power-stealing powers. And then, yes, we have the White Avenger, who appears to be, like, racist Superman.
Yeah.
And these guys are from the late 80s Black Panther series, which I had totally forgotten existed.
Yeah.
And they're created by Peter B. Gillis and Dennis Cohen. I think Dennis Cohen at least is black, so this wasn't maybe totally clueless.
Yeah. I'm
trying to remember if Peter B. Gillis also did some previous Black Panther work. The name is familiar.
He did, I think, late Defenders, and he did Doctor Strange for a while in the 80s, I think.
Maybe Micronauts, too.
I'm pretty sure he definitely did Micronauts.
So these guys are like, what, border patrol between fake South Africa and Wakanda?
Well, apparently the Panther God was empowered an oppressed Azanian citizen as the Panther.
Uh-huh.
And so then the Azanians assumed that that was the Black Panther. And okay. So they prepared to send these guys into Wakanda because, I guess instead of, you know, if it was just a military thing, you'd send the military, but they've got a superhero king, so you send a bunch of superheroes.
Oh.
And so they sent them in. T'Challa obviously made reasonably short work of these guys because he's the Black Panther and they're a bunch of doofs. And so this didn't work, so they Azania prepared to nuke Wakanda.
Well, that
seems like a little... That's a lot. That's escalation.
That's a bit much, especially if you live near them.
You send superheroes, that doesn't work. Nuclear bomb.
In comics, everybody has nukes. Why does everybody have nukes?
Because everybody has nukes in the real world now.
Well, because they're superheroes. What else are you going to do, apart from creating your own hilarious superheroes?
I don't know. I do think it's kind of interesting that they are almost a racist Justice League, which I know there are at least two or three Nazi versions, at least half of which created by, speaking of, Roy Thomas.
Yes.
Roy, what are you doing, man?
The one that I remember has a
the Nazi Aquaman.
And I think their Green Arrow is Italian.
I think the reason that almost all superhero parody type teams end up looking like the Justice League is that the Justice League have a really identifiable lineup.
Yeah, it's better than like the Avengers.
Well, until really recently, the Avengers main lineup was not that identifiable. Because
it kept changing, for one.
Not just because it kept changing, but because there wasn't really an iconic set lineup. So, like, you think of the Justice League, and they had their basic lineup for, like, nearly a decade, whereas the Avengers was changing their lineup by issue 2.
Yeah.
Like they literally lost a member in the second issue. And so there's you don't have that steady, iconic thing to pull from. The other thing is that DC didn't do those kind of parodies of Marvel that much because they saw themselves as the better people.
Hmm.
So Marvel would constantly go and have a parody JLA because they want to poke fun at DC, but DC were already looking up their noses at Marvel, so they didn't have that sort of thing. So most superhero teams end up looking like the Justice League.
Well, yeah, because you have, like, a nationalistic Superman. You have a smart, darker guy. You have a woman in there somewhere. You have a weirdo who might have something to do with the water.
Well, that's the other thing is... That's the other thing is, if you put a Batman analog and a Superman analog in a team, it doesn't matter what the rest of the lineup is, yeah, it already looks like the Justice League.
Yes.
Yeah.
You basically don't need to do anything other than just put those two in a team. And because there isn't a really strong central Superman analog in the main Marvel canon, because most people didn't realize that's what Thor was, making a fake one is really popular in Marvel comics as well. So
it's been done so many times.
There's probably more fake Supermen in the Marvel universe than there are in the DC universe.
Yeah, even after the death of Superman, there's way.
Yeah, more. Even if you include the death of Superman stuff, yeah,
and include the red and blue Superman.
Well, in the 1950s and 60s, Superman ran into fake Superman all the time. But, yeah, ever since, like, the 1980s, it doesn't happen as much.
I guess that part of the problem is, who fights Superman? Who is capable of fighting Superman? Mostly other Supermen.
Hmm. Yeah, it's like Godzilla fights. Eventually,
you have a... It's like Spider-Man, where you can just, throw a dart at your zoo cards and come up with a new villain.
Oh, zoo cards. The best thing that Marvel Comics ever did was start making villains based on zoo cards.
Well, that's what Jack Kirby solved in the 1970s was what do you do with Superman? And it turns out the answer is let Jack Kirby design the villains. Cause
he made the best ones.
But if you look at nearly all of Superman's villains after the 1970s, either they're actually Jack Kirby characters, or they look like they were designed by Jack Kirby. You know, I mean, so you have, what do you call him? That guy who killed Superman that one time?
Doomsday.
Doomsday. And he looks like he walks straight out of Apocalypse.
Yeah.
And basically what Kirby did was solve the design problem with Superman. So you don't need to have every other character be a fake Superman. Because what Kirby did that hardly anybody talks about is change the silhouette of superheroes, right? So if you look back at the 1950s, the silhouette of superheroes is almost all just a white guy. And if you just did a black silhouette of every DC hero from that period, they'd either fit into non-caped or caped, and that would be it. And you could not tell them apart. But if you do that with the lineup of Marvel's 1960s guys, it's completely different. So you have, you have the Thing, you have the Mr. Fantastic, you have the Human Torch, and the Human Torch has a completely different silhouette because of his fire powers and everything. And obviously Kirby didn't create him, but you see this complete change in the way the silhouette works. And it, once Kirby went to the DC in the 1970s, it also changes there. And suddenly you could have these gigantic hulking villains that you never had before. And, I mean, not never. I mean, obviously you have a handful of them in DC before that. You have guys like,
there's Blockbuster, who was basically Batman versus the Hulk. who came out in the 1960s. Vandal Savage?
Oh, Vandal Savage, yeah, you know.
Well,
you
he's
got,
from the
you 40s. Got him and, yeah, you got
Caveman
a
boy.
Few guys from the 40s. And that was the thing, is like in the 40s, you didn't have that fixed silhouette either. It's the 50s where you get this fixed silhouette of what every character looks like, which is just a white man standing straight. You know, like
every character kind of just has the same general build as Adam West.
Yeah,
well, a little
pretty
little
much. Yeah,
everybody looks like somebody's dad.
Yes,
pretty much everybody. And it's interesting that we have been so unwilling to actually address the fact that we're talking about a bunch of white supremacists that we've just gone completely off topic. This is the off topic episode.
Uh-huh. And believe it or not, these guys came back after,
really, after getting their butts handed to them by,
well, obviously they were looking for a slightly, I mean, obviously it still had to be a black character, but somebody who was maybe a little less impressive than the superhero king of a country. And,
Falcon?
It was Night Thrasher.
Is it Falcon?
Night Thrasher.
Oh, Night Thrasher. Yeah. So
less
he
impressive,
stopped attacking a furry cosplayer and went after a skateboarder.
Yes, but listen, he could stab people with that skateboard.
And he has.
In Black Panther's debut, he fought the Fantastic Four to a standstill. So, these guys, they're kind of stuffed.
Listen, Night Thrasher did fight the Punisher to a standstill by hitting him with his skateboard.
The Black Panther, I read his first appearance very recently, so it's big in my head. The Black Panther built a robotic jungle inside of the real jungle for shits and giggles.
What?
Just for the fuck of it, because he could. The guy is nuts and awesome.
That sounds amazing. That is kind of a Doctor Doom plan. It's like, I'm just going to turn part of the forest into a cyborg forest. What?
Yeah. He made a robot jungle.
So I mean, the Azanians actually kind of got their act together before South Africa did. Uh-huh. And like they initiated basically a Truth and Reconciliation Commission, tried to, fix things up a little, and of course they descended into civil war.
Oops.
So the country became unstable, and the government had to get the American ambassador out of Azania. And so, of course, they sent Night Thrasher. This doesn't explain why they sent Night Thrasher.
No, that if you're going to pick anybody, how could Night Thrasher be the only one available?
Was this from the Night Thrasher limited series?
No, this is the Night Thrasher ongoing series.
Ongoing.
Yeah, huh? And it apparently lasted at least 18 issues.
My God.
Night Thrasher.
I love Night Thrasher, but he has a terrible name.
Yes, he does.
Yeah.
Well, it's basically a name that boils down to Black Skateboarder.
Yeah. Or Nocturnal Masturbator.
Yeah, as you do.
Anyway, so he's rescuing an ambassador.
Yeah. And apparently the supremacists, as you might figure, sided with the racist faction. And along the way, apparently the past Harrier had his ass kicked so badly by Night Thrasher that they had to get a new one. And this one was a lady. Because apart from that, this was previously all dudes.
Yeah.
Yeah, plus they might be racist, but they're not sexist.
I mean, they're probably also sexist.
Probably, yeah.
And she was probably also their secretary, like the 40s Justice League.
Well, at least she's wearing basically the same outfit as the previous Harrier, which is full body covered with technology stuff.
And also huge 80s shoulder pads.
Yeah, so she doesn't end up looking like Circuit Breaker is the thing.
No. So unsurprisingly, Night Thrasher actually took down all of these guys.
Yeah, good for him.
Embarrassingly, Hunger tried to steal his powers and then found that he doesn't actually have any superpowers.
Oh, Hunger, you idiot.
But he could suddenly get really good airtime.
Well, what's interesting to me is that the appearance of the Night Thrasher ongoing was written by Kurt Busiek, who we actually just brought up earlier.
That's right.
It went for 21 issues, not 18 issues.
Oh, Lord. So it's not that magic 25.
No. Nope.
That's pretty impressive for Night Thrasher.
Oh, yeah,
for Night Thrasher. And also, he did have a 4-issue miniseries before that.
Oh, yes.
He did have a 4-issue
equal 25. Miniseries. Good job, right. Night Thrasher.
I guess we could always ask Busick why the government decided to send Night Thrasher.
I mean, I'm kind of curious about this. I may just find the back issues. I can't imagine they're going for much.
No. Not until Night Thrasher comes back.
Oh my God, he fought an albino wolf man called Aardwolf.
Yes. Hey, the Aardwolf is an actual animal.
Yeah, but it's not a wolf.
Well, no, it's an Aardwolf.
Yeah.
It eats ants. It was always the second animal in my animal books when I was a kid.
The
Aardvark and then Aardwolf.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
The
zoo cards again.
The cover copy is amazing.
He's more savage than Sabretooth. He's more savvy than Trump. He's Aardwolf.
Right.
Murder in Madripoor.
Aardwolf.
Now, wait, do they mean the magician Trump or the executive Trump?
It would be great if they meant the supervillainous magician. More savvy than a guy who uses stage magic to rob banks.
Oh my God. This, the text above this image of these
sealed with a disc.
Sealed with a disc.
Oh man, it's
my God.
Thing circle.
I hate you so much.
Of some really terrible 90s names. The big guy is Bloodstrike.
He's all positive.
The flying woman who is on fire is Silk Fever.
What? That's dumb.
The smiling guy is Smiling Tiger, who I actually kind of like. And the other guy with the ponytail is Midnight's Fire.
That sounds dirty, too. And, of course, yeah. The woman is what, Stiletto?
Silhouette.
Silhouette. Begin with this.
Who is his sister or something?
Girlfriend.
Oh. Well, she's the sister of
Midnight's
some
Fire.
Guy that he... Oh.
Yeah, that Midnight's Fire sister is... because their fathers were all soldiers in what is probably not any Vietnam anymore. And they married the priestesses in this temple, and there was an ancient curse or something.
Huh. Okay, so they got cursed to have super-powered kids? What?
I guess. And also, Night Thrasher was involved in this somehow. It was weird. And also, again, did I mention that big guy's name is Bloodstrike?
Well, yeah, this is the 90s, wasn't it? Of course it
is.
Of course.
Does he actually have four eyes, or just very weird
shades? No, they're just those sunglasses that, like, flip up.
But they flip up
have four eyeballs.
Exactly the same. So
they flip up and there's sunglasses underneath.
But when you flip them down, they're double sunglasses. That makes them doubly cool.
Well, he has to wear the second layer of sunglasses in the daytime because it's nighttime on the cover. We're getting off topic talking about covers again. Let's get back to the racists.
Yeah, so anyway... these guys have lost to Black Panther, they've lost to Night Thrasher, and also there isn't really a point of having a fake South Africa anymore, given that the real South Africa doesn't have apartheid. So are these guys just unemployed now?
Probably. Wait, are they all powered? Do they actually have superpowers, or are they suit-powered?
No, I mean, the Harrier has suit powers, and then Vortrekker doesn't have any superpowers.
Yeah, I guess
but the rest of them do have actual powers.
Yeah. And there's one, we don't need another Superman bad guy analog, but maybe the rest of them. Although, what are they going to do? Are they still going to be racist running around?
I mean, maybe they're like, you know, like there are a lot of South African mercenaries.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe they're working for Ultimatum now. They're going to be hired to kill Deadpool.
Well, I'd say until recent events, they could always be lackeys for the Red Skull.
This is true.
Well, he's now the White Power Skull or whatever the fuck.
Well, he's like a prisoner of Doctor Doom now, so he's not really doing anything. But there are a bunch of other racist villains. You know, they could join up with the Sons of the Serpent.
Well, what's the hate monger up to?
Yeah, I think he's currently dead, but, you know, there's always another Hitler clone waiting in a tank somewhere.
I think you're going in completely the wrong direction. I think what you do with these guys is you turn them into nationalist heroes. And you make them a hero group instead of a villain group.
In other words, try to reform them?
No, not even reform them. Just say, look, their country has changed and they've changed and they still represent their country.
Ah, so they're like Obsidian and Stryker from Beast Machine.
Yeah, basically. Or like the Soviet super soldiers, you know, how they basically started as villains and they became heroes over time. You just do that.
It's have a little hard with these guys because of the whole race thing.
Well, you could replace a couple of them. Like, they get a difficult third carrier who's a black woman. Hey, we have one black person on our team now.
We have a black friend, guys.
Very black friend.
No, what you do is first you change their name. Because you can't un-racist them if they're called the supremacists.
Yes.
You change their name, and then you just add three more members who are black. Like, beef up their roster so it's even wider. You have both
versions.
Add,
like, fake Green Arrow, fake Firestorm, and...
Well, they've already got a fire guy.
Yeah.
Okay, fake...
Aquaman.
Fake Aquaman. Fake Woman. And
you bring back the other version of Harrier as well. You have both Harriers on the team.
Well, they, you can call you one ten of them.
No, you can call one Harrier and call one Harriet. I'm sorry.
Oh,
but
Harriet.
Yeah.
Well, that would be Hawkman and Hawkgirl.
Yeah.
Or Harrier and Harry Her.
Well, they can just call one Aunt Harrier, and she can live in the mansion with fake Batman.
But you could totally use them in that way, and like have them have to team up with the Black Panther instead of fighting him.
And they're still just kind of subtly racist, so you know they team up with like the Falcon, and they're Falcon, you're one of the good ones.
Well, no.
Yeah.
They don't have to be racist. They could be nationalist now.
They're like not out-and-out cross-burning racists, but they're still, you know, they're still not 100% cool with black people.
You can address the fact that they don't necessarily trust black. They're not necessarily liberal, but that they still stand for noble ideals that they think are noble ideals. And well, you can use a hero like that.
You're probably not going to get very far with a guy named the White Avenger, though.
It could be like how the Great Lakes Avengers were sued by the actual Avengers to prevent them from using the name. The actual Avengers sued this guy, so he has to, you know, change his name to something else.
No. You keep him as the White Avenger, but you give him a full face mask. And then at some point you reveal that he's been replaced by a black guy.
So a reverse Blue Marvel? Or actually, that kind of would be Blue Marvel, but...
Yeah, and you make the term white be about his costume. And every now and then somebody will bring it up, and then you just say, no, it's my costume. Yeah, my costume is white. I'm not a racist. My costume is white. That's the point. I'm the colors of my national flag, dudes. That's why I'm the White Avenger. You say that, and you put the full face mask on him, because you take away his race aspect by putting a full face mask on it. But you don't ignore it. You address it. But you allow him to stay as the White Avenger, I reckon. And then you find out what the hell Vortrekker means.
It actually does mean a thing. It's an actual word.
Meaning. I'm sure it is.
It's a name given to Afrikaners who migrated north from the British Cape Colony during what became known as the Great Trek. So it basically means like pioneer.
Only more racist.
It would be like calling a guy the Homelander or something.
Hmm. Well,
the carpetbagger.
Well, maybe not the carpetbagger.
No, it probably is the equivalent of the carpetbagger, I would think. Dirty.
Is Claw South African?
No, Claw is Dutch.
Dutch. Okay.
What? Noted hotbed of supervillainy, Holland.
Yeah, but the Dutch are where the Afrikaans come from.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is he not Afrikaans?
No, he's from he's from the Netherlands.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
But, he's probably got some South African relatives.
Almost certainly, yes.
but he's not South African.
No, I'm not sure.
But he is pretty racist.
Yeah, I'm not sure if Marvel has dealt with, like, the actual South Africa very much.
Hmm.
I don't know. It'd be worth dealing with it now.
Would be interesting.
But, I don't know. I think these sort of characters you can trot out if you want to tell a certain kind of story.
Mm-hmm.
But it has to be that specific kind of story. Otherwise, they just don't work.
Yeah.
Well, have they done anything with Russia since the whole fall of communism?
Oh, yeah. A lot of, the Winter Guard / Soviet super soldier sort of trying to, restore their honor.
Well, they'll have to work at that. I did read the Soviet super soldiers one shot.
Yeah. Actually, they bring back miniseries.
They should bring back Devastator. So he can get beaten up on the whole
thing. He was on some sort of newish incarnation of the team.
Like Devos the Devastator?
No, the Devastator who was a kind of goofily attired member of the Soviet super soldiers.
Huh.
They had a satellite in orbit and it projects power down into the Devastator. So he's basically solar power. Yeah, basically OMAC. But he's basically this incredibly powerful solar powered dude. And the Hulk basically just crushed his hands until the power fed back and he died.
Wouldn't it have been easier to just chuck
I don't know
up
if he
satellite?
Died, but
break the satellite.
I'm not sure the Hulk knows how satellites work. But
nobody could probably feel the radiation.
Well, it was like the broadcast energy transmitter from G.I. Joe. Taking it full circle.
It's not a wire. Like, he doesn't have a wire coming down from the satellite.
No, that was broadcast. Really. And broadcast power is a thing that has been experimented with.
Yes, Tesla and shit.
It's like in The Prestige.
Mm.
Got all those light bulbs. He's David Bowie. Did you see that movie? It's a good movie.
Yeah, it's a good movie. I've seen that movie. It's David Bowie. I know. It's David Bowie, like Tesla.
So anyway,
and
yeah, I think
racist South African not dudes. Yeah, we don't know what the fell to do with them.
I think that they can be used in the right story as, guys who have sort of changed their ways and sort of not.
Yeah. But unless you're doing a Black Panther comic, why bother, really?
Well, you could use them as an analog for modern American police. So you have people who claim they're not racist. They behave in racist ways, but they use language that couches their racism in actual police procedure, So basically they say, no, it's not. We're not targeting them. We're targeting the crime, that sort of thing. And then the Black Panther punches them in the face.
Yeah, well,
I mean, he's getting his own movie, so he's probably getting his own comic soon.
Oh, yeah.
He's getting his own movie?
Yeah, he
that
is.
That makes me so happy.
They've already
cast him. He's going to be, what's his name, Jackie Robinson.
I don't remember the actor's name.
I love Black Panther. I hope they do well with him.
Hmm.
Well, they announced it when they announced the Captain Marvel movie.
Yeah.
Chadwick Boseman is the actor.
Ah, that's a weird name. Chadwick.
He also played James Brown.
But it's interesting because Black Panther is a fantastic character, so it would be really great to see him on the big screen. I hope this guy can do a decent African accent.
I mean, they'll do a thing where he was, like, educated in the States.
Well, with a name like Chadwick, isn't he British?
No, he's American. He's from Brooklyn.
Oh, but Chadwick, wow. Damn. Chadwick.
Yeah, I mean, it's right up there with Benedict Cumberbatch.
Kinda. But Benedict just seems like a more common name than Chadwick. Anyway, we're hopping on a...
Is really that common a name?
Ben?
It's the name of one of your country's most famous traitors.
Well, he wouldn't be an American with that name. Anywho.
So yeah, the supremacists, they're not so supreme.
No.
And I think that should do it for this evening's 80-page cast. So signing off, I'm Rob London.
I am the terror that flaps in the night. David Henyon, good night.
On my two-way wrist computer, sort of, not really, I'm Matt Karpowicz.
And I'm probably going to watch some K-pop. So see you later, guys. Bye.
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 Okay, now I'm regretting bringing this up.
Oh, we're all full of regrets.